What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot, your favorite podcast about curling with your hosts, Robin Wagner and Charles William Carpenter III.
Yes, and I placed third in the 2014 Olympics for curling.
Oh, so. You did?
Yes.
Okay, so you were out there sweeping?
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Kept it clean. Keep the ice clean. That's what they say. Yeah.
Someone else who keeps it clean, our guest today, Kevin Winery. What's going on, Kevin?
Not too much, my friends. How are you doing? Thanks so much
for having me. Doing well. Yeah, thanks for being on. Can you please give the folks at home a few sentences about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm a part of the Dino team, and Dino is a open source JavaScript and TypeScript runtime that was created by the original author of Node.js. And it's kind of about like convention over configuration and kind of rolling a lot of the like most adopted technologies in the JavaScript ecosystem directly into the runtime. So there's like built-in TypeScript and stuff like that.
Yep.
And I've been doing DevRel and JavaScript development for kind of a while. I spent about a decade at a company called Twilio that has telephony APIs. Did a lot of fun stuff there. I built Twilio Quest, which was a web-based technology, like video game, like a desktop PC game. They built with like React and Phaser and stuff like that. So
cool.
Yeah, I've been kind of bumming around the developer tool space for a while now, and I get to do it at Dino, which has been super fun.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, I'm already intrigued with the convention over configuration because that hits me in my
that's like
my
the
soul.
Rails, the Ember. That's,
yeah,
the,
I've been using Ember for 12 years. So
nice. Yeah. That's really lovely. Yeah.
I think you just made Robbie a Dino fan.
There we
regardless.
Go.
Well, I haven't tried it, but we will get into some details on it in a minute. So what we can start with, though, tell us about the whiskey. Do you need this? Can you read this here?
I think so. You know, this episode is brought to you by I Need Reading Glasses. Ineedreadingglasses.co.uk. Yes, exactly. All those things. Anyway, today we're having the Templeton Rye. It's a six-year rye that's their regular expression. It is 95% rye and 5% barley, 91.5% proof. Little dots,
percent
degrees.
Proof. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Alcohol. Yeah.
But
let's do it.
It keeps happening. All right.
That sounds great.
We're going to start with the guest here.
Yeah.
So
pass it down.
Pass it down. Take one down.
Yeah.
Pass it around.
Yeah.
95% of rye on the wall.
I've really
you
only
didn't know I was going to sing this episode
in the last couple of years kind of come around to whiskey. So I'm stoked to try a new one here.
I initially did everything wrong, and Chuck has been educating me about the correct way to do everything. So
side note, listener, because there's only one. I've been telling him the wrong stuff the whole time. We all laugh.
As
together.
A joke.
It's so kind.
All the real people put ice in it, but I got him to take ice out.
I got him to take ice out. Crushed ice is actually a superpower.
Yeah.
Anyway, alas, here we go. So we'll start with the smell.
Yeah, I like to put this in so we don't spill it everywhere.
You act like I'm clumsy.
Ooh.
Okay.
It's got some funk.
Yeah. Give us that funk. We want the funk.
It smells like a...
It does have a mildewy kind of smell to it.
Like a grape candy that you you licked it and then you left it out in the elements for a year.
I'm not lying.
That was on the tip of my tongue, but you beat me to it.
Yeah, the grape candy smell.
You don't smell grape candy?
No, I 100% smell that. Okay. And I was like, what is that? And you, as soon as you started saying it,
a grape lifesaver.
I don't know about hard lifesaver.
Well, because of the funky, mildewy.
Right. Yeah. I got rained on for a little while and you picked it up and smelled it and you were like, would I eat this? And then you still do.
Yeah, sure.
No, I probably wouldn't. I'm pretty into not eating after people or eating weird things. Yeah.
The things you put in your body, I'm surprised. Anyway, we can taste this.
Yeah. Let's give it a shot.
I still got a little bit of that. Now, I would almost take it one step further and be like, grape drink. Instead of grape handy, I would go
Kool-Aid?
Grape drink. No, not Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You had the little jugs or
whatever. Yeah, the tiny jugs.
Ooh, the little jugs. Hugs?
Little hugs, yes.
Yeah.
Little hugs. This one has a little more hug. It has that.
The little barrel.
Yeah.
And then that spice comes out. You get the woodiness. Mm-hmm. You get a little nutmeggy almost. Mm. Yeah. A little bitter, little nutmeggy.
Nutmeg must be a thing. Nutmeg finishes a lot of whiskey cocktails I'm discovering.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah.
I taste a little bit of cinnamony, you took a little piece of Big Red and put it with your lifesaver.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
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 I mean, not wrong. None of these answers are wrong. And that is what is so fun about this.
Unless you say smoked salmon. Wrong.
Not getting fish.
No, yeah. I'm not getting a fish smell. I feel like if I smelled fish in my whiskey,
you probably wouldn't
I'm probably
that,
just going to go ahead and say, this one's not good.
Yeah.
I don't think this is what they meant.
Oh, is it Norwegian? Bass. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, is this Norwegian?
The rare Norwegian whiskey.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. They're more of like clean spirits kind of country, I think. Right. Like, I've not been to Norway. I have been to the Netherlands. I'm trying to think. I was just trying to say, where in that region have I been? Just the Netherlands, I think.
Yeah. Norway was amazing. I was in Larvik, like there was a, like, Dino is a globally distributed company, so we get together like in a random world city like three times a year.
Yes.
And we did it in Norway, like just when I joined the company, and we took a boat ride with this guy who is like, was just legendary. Like, I think he just like drives people around in a boat and gives tours for fun.
Yeah.
And he, off the side of his boat, just like dragged like a six pack of beer with him the entire time because like the fjord was so cold.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was just how you preferred to drink. So
that was interesting.
I would also prefer that.
Yeah. I'd say it's seemed like the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You a chill fridge your wine or a cooler is way too easy.
No, you go, you know, right? Fancy Whole Foods boy. You go in there and you're chilling your wine. They put it in water that's chilled and moving.
Yeah. Okay.
And that quickly.
So this brings me back to it. Yeah. There's a weird thing about water, and this is totally off topic, but it triggered my mind.
Okay.
If your water is hot, it makes ice quicker than cold water. Did you know that?
Really?
And more clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
because
if you do those, like,
our fridge is hooked up to the hot water, I was like, what dumbass did this? And I was like, looking it up, and they're like, oh, actually, it's good for water. I was like, okay, I stand corrected.
Yes. So fun fact to listener is that heat your water before freezing it. Yeah. Even if you're doing ice trays, it actually, but I know it makes them more clear too.
Yes, yeah, so, that theoretically, but you got to have that.
Water, heat them up.
It's enough talking about that. Let's rate this one.
Okay, so our rating system, as engineers, we like to start at zero indexing.
Sure.
So it is technically until 8. I guess it could be 9. It was based on an octopi-like character a long time ago.
8 tentacles,
but
it could be 0.
Yep, could be 0.
Yeah.
So 0 being horrible, you might as well just throw this
away. The octopus is gone.
4, middle of the road, not bad, not great for you. 8 being like amazing, clear the shelves. Feel free to compare this in any way that you'd like. We, because we've had so many, will be like, we'll compare this to other ryes. You could go whiskeys, you can go just adult beverages, all you want. I won't put you on the spot first.
Okay. Appreciate it.
That's the thing that we do for
our
guests.
Are you putting me on the spot first for the fourth time in a row, or is it
you
this
time? I'll take it for you.
Okay.
You know, even though you're not nice.
That's fine. That's fine.
All righty. So, yeah, this is very tasty to me. This is, and price I take into consideration. I think this is around $50.
And the bottle looks cool.
And the bottle looks cool. This nice presentation, interesting flavors, a little hug there, nothing crazy. I'm probably going to give it a 5.5. It's a 5. It feels like I'm leaning towards 5. It's not like it's above average. It's not incredible, but I definitely would say like, oh, I see this on the shelf. I know this one's pretty decent. We can go with this one. You know, you're picking up a bottle with friends or whatever else. So I think for me, this is about a 5.5.
Okay. Is it me next or?
You tell me.
Kevin, yeah.
You want to go?
I can certainly wait.
Okay.
So I'm much more of a whiskey plebeian than you two, but the one that I like the most is Sexton, which is an Irish whiskey.
Right.
And that one, I do drink neat pretty frequently, and I do like it quite a lot. So that's probably like my 6. And so I would probably anchor this at around 5 or 5.5 as well. So like I probably do prefer the Sexton a little bit, but this is really nice. Drinks with it smoothly.
Yeah. So my favorite rye, as everyone who listens knows, Sagamore from Baltimore. Good stuff. This is nothing like that.
No, it's very different.
So with that in mind, I don't really know what to do because like the rye that I would want to taste is not what this tastes like, but this is actually tasty.
Yes.
So I'm kind of at an impasse. I'm going to rate it in general, I think, without rye in mind.
Yes.
And give it a 5.92. Mm-hmm. Because it's good, but it does not really tastes like a rye. Like if this were a bourbon or something else that I'm expecting other flavors from, it's very good, but like it's not spicy enough to be a rye, in my opinion.
What led you to go to the second significant digit there?
I just like to be as random as possible.
Okay.
Chuck did like I don't know what on the last 6.92347.
There's some,
it'd be like a pie rating.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it's all kind of arbitrary anyway. My rating really doesn't speak to your personal rating or anyone else's per se. Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, oh, this is better than average. Once you get in the 6 to 7 range, I mean, like, anything that is pretty good is in that range. So it's kind of arbitrary. Like, if you just love something and you want to do that way more, then great. You should call that an 8 and kind of go with it. I would say that this is my little addendum to that, is that this is a approachable rye. It's very tasty.
True.
It's not high spice like a lot of ryes can be. Like, if you go have lower a wild
proof,
turkey
lower
rye,
spice. Yeah.
It's going to punch you in the mouth a little bit if you haven't had many ryes. Like, this one feels like a nice approachable rye, which is why I think you putting it in a different category actually speaks well to folks who might want to start to step their way there.
If you haven't had a rye, maybe start here. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yep. So, yeah. All right. So now to our loot. Warm takes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm ready.
Shit that people argue about on Twitter. Sorry, Clark. Anyway.
What? Okay. Anyway.
This is a family show.
It's a family show.
They can't hear us out there.
Well, streaming.
Actually, they can. Yes. The people sitting right here can. So sorry. Yes. Anyway. Explicit types or inferred types for TypeScript?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In that, I'm a bit of a TypeScript curmudgeon in that, like, I like my JavaScript just fine before it had types.
Okay.
So
okay.
If we can infer types, that's certainly my preference.
Okay.
Again, because I grew up in the bad old days of writing self-calling functions to create scope when none existed. So as little typing and as little rules as possible is usually what I prefer.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to take you to the other direction. I think I know this answer. Tailwind or vanilla CSS?
Like a year ago, I would have told you vanilla CSS without question. But I decided, like, enough, like, people who I respect and who want to be productive in their own lives are like, Tailwind is great. You'll never go back.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, like, I'm just going to do it for, you know, several months and kind of like hold my nose and not, you know, try to freak out too much. And once I kind of like grokked the zen of it, like utility, I can't love Tailwind now. So I actually am all about Tailwind.
Nice.
To be fair, I saw your tweet where you said that. So,
okay. So you
so were, I was like, I know where this is going to go.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Git rebase or Git merge?
What? I mean, I tend to want to merge because I just find that workflow a little easier to rock. But so, like, most of the time when I have a choice, I will merge.
Okay. Yeah. Rebasing makes no sense, to be fair.
Yes.
But you don't get that merge commit of like, you merged this.
That's right. That is annoying. It does feel a little dirty, but it kind of like, it makes sense to me because that is like an operation that I performed on the code base. Like,
that's true. That's true.
And like, that is an event that happened. So,
but if they would make an in between, that I can merge but not have that, I would absolutely choose that.
That would be the ideal. So if anybody's, you know, with the power to change that. I don't know who can change that.
Whoever's writing the new Git in Rust, that's the people that can change.
There we go.
Oh, that's true.
That's a good idea.
Right, yeah. That's definitely happening somewhere.
I'm sure someone's working on it. I don't know if it'll be popular, but we'll see.
I'm going to give you the previous one. So sidebar on the left or right in VS Code?
Definitely on the left, I could see. The only way I could see like you preferring the right is if you came up in that .NET world, because I think in Visual Studio, like C# projects by default have the sidebar. So, yeah. I've always been Sublime Text, TextMate, VS Code from that tradition, and the sidebars usually.
Yeah, I feel like it's rare to find someone that cares enough to move it. Like if you found that config, you're probably just deleting the sidebar and like searching for stuff.
I didn't even try. Like I don't think you can drag and drop it over there.
No,
like
it's in the setting.
It's a config. It's a setting thing.
And the settings don't let you find stuff unless you open the JSON file and like manually do it.
It takes a lot of work to change things, and I don't care enough.
Right.
That's really what it is.
Because I'm searching for every file. I have too many files to look at the sidebar and find it.
Yeah.
So
I was just saying, I had the same path in text editors as you did. Like, I really didn't go through like heavy IDEs. So it was like Sublime Text for quite some time, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I started off like in Eclipse most of the time.
Once
I was able to kind of make the jump.
So you didn't do Dreamweaver?
I skipped Dreamweaver. I like Dreamweaver is kind of already kind of passe. Coming up.
So I came from like basically photography and then getting into web tools through that. So it was like Adobe has a bolt-on thing here. You go from Photoshop to that and then look at your tables and how terrible this is. But, you know, at least they map together. And then as soon as I was out of that world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never figured out Vim, really. Like, I learned colon Q, and that's basically...
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone learned how to quit it after they accidentally opened it.
At one point, did know, like, some shortcuts for inserts and moving up and down and that. And that was pretty much it. And I was like, I'm only doing this in this time because I have to for this reason. And I kind of never came back to it. I remember another time, like, a colleague broke his hand or something. So he basically had to learn how to work one-handed.
Mouse.
Yeah, he couldn't mouse. And so he like got really good at Vim, and I'd watch him, and I'd always be like, I'd love to do that, and then never
did it. It's impressive to watch. Yeah,
people who are good at Vim look like they are like hacking the mainframe.
That's what hackers actually look like. They're like, oh, this does happen. Okay, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I always use Nano. I was like that one guy.
Yeah, I use Nano. Like, I have to like edit my like Z, like my RC files. Like, I'm usually Nano.
Dang. All right, let's see. Are you wanting me to ask this one? Is that what you were saying?
I'm just saying I'm not. That's your choice.
Was GraphQL a mistake?
I don't think GraphQL was a mistake. I think it actually is reasonable in some contexts. Like, I've seen it, especially, like, if there's, like, I was looking at a product recently that lets you sort of, like, manage high volumes of logging data and putting, like, GraphQL interfaces on top of, like, large unstructured data sets makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It just seems to be a lot of work to, like, get the tooling set up, and once you get it set up, it's pretty nice. But also, like, I haven't necessarily, like, tried it and then been so blown away that I'm like, oh, this is very obviously better than a REST API, and I need to, like, change everything that I know about HTTP APIs. So, yeah, I think I've definitely seen use cases where they've been, like, a pretty obviously good choice.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Mistake would be too strong, I'd say.
At this point, I've forgotten why people said it was a mistake, but it was a thing for a minute.
Well,
do you remember the reasons?
Well, people were starting to latch on to, well, first of all, some people discovered JSON API and realized, like,
which has been around forever.
All of my reasons for picking this were actually already solved in JSON API, and you know, the includes and like kind of customizing your payloads a little bit per page. Mm-hmm. So it was really more of a client side issue of things. I think GraphQL is a good tool in like large microservice architectures, for example, where you can have a federated graph and then like each service owns its own thing. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of another argument against GraphQL was around like, oh, yeah, well, now front-end engineers can basically like throttle your response times by including or discluding certain fields.
But that's good.
It's not necessarily. If you don't know the story of that resolver, just because you add one field and maybe that resolver hits another service that is a crawler and it's like crazy.
So you
stuff.
Made it exponential without knowing.
You made it super slow without knowing, but then like contract testing sort of solves that for you, right?
Yeah.
Like as soon as the contract changes on either side, there's a little warning thrown up, and at least then you've done something to mitigate that. But like, yeah, that was another argument against it, which, you know, potentially the same thing happens in JSON API when you decide to do an additional include for a separate table that is not performant.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I think the configurability is good in general.
Yeah.
Like sometimes APIs are really heavy and you just want like one field.
Yeah.
Like that part, like scoping it down
is
better.
Nice. Yeah.
Adding can get messy.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like regular CRUD APIs are just like wild, wild west. Right.
Yeah.
Like, so
that is true. But I feel like you probably need to have a reason to want a GraphQL API. Like
I think there's
some kind of use case for your clients where like it is actually important that they can control the size of the payload.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the REST API is probably a
spirit. It's not a mistake. It's just not a panacea like everybody thought 5 years ago.
You know? I don't think it's like a default choice.
No. No.
Yeah.
By any means.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the final one is, what do you think about nested ternaries?
Nested ternaries. So you have gone a little deep, like on my Twitter rants, I feel like, because the nested ternary is a major.
This isn't just a whiskey podcast, just so you know.
Yeah.
So some, you have a serious research team behind this, like going into.
Yes, yeah, we spend literal minutes.
Spend dozens of minutes before every episode.
I compensate myself well for it. Don't worry.
So not a fan, but specifically in the context of like JSX, like if you have a large like tree of JSX that is all like being conditionally rendered by ternaries, which is kind of the pattern within JSX, like that code is very difficult to read and to understand like under what conditions this little block of something is being rendered. So if you must have like nested ternaries, like don't have like also then huge chunks of HTML in your JSX.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, JSX, I feel like, could benefit from just having like a switch statement or a bunch of if statements. Like, they don't make that easy, but you should just be able to like, it's definitely this, it's definitely this, instead of like.
Yeah, you could imagine there being like a higher order component that handles Boolean logic or conditional.
Yeah, like every other framework has, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, he did make this a JSX problem and not a React problem.
Well, that's
so
true.
Bear in mind, I did actually kind of appreciate that you said like, this is a thing you can
JSX
do in
problem.
Any JSX. This isn't a
That's
React
true.
Thing. It's a
because in React class based, you don't have that problem. Yeah.
are you like class based components?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Oh yeah. Well, I've been using Ember and will use Ember until it dies. And so I don't care about all this. Like, oh, we're doing server components and the whatever, and then not relevant to me. But
I see.
But I do like to play devil's advocate on the opposite side of everything. So
you did like Next for a minute.
No. Okay. All right. I like the Next and Remix and all these things add like sane defaults on top of React, because that was my big thing about React is like, okay, you install it and now you need to figure out the next 15 packages you want to install to do all the things you need for a framework.
You've never written a thunk or a saga, so I don't feel
Okay. This is a rabbit hole and I won't go all the way down it, but we used Ember Redux and did a bunch of thunks and sagas and bullshit. And I was like, we're using Ember, but the guy like above me was like, no, we're going to use Redux. And I was like, no.
Every data was good.
Yeah. But yeah.
It's
well,
good.
That's a rant for another day.
Okay.
So let's talk about something more modern and up to date here. Dino. What's going on with Dino these days?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, we actually just dropped the 1.40 release, but yeah, basically the goal of Dino is to like kind of rectify some of the like configuration hell that's kind of happening within the Node.js ecosystem and sort of combine a lot of the tools that you're going to need anyway, like your linter, your formatter, your testing framework, you know, TypeScript and JSX kind of being sort of standard language extensions, things like that. So we're also working on the Dino 2.0 launch, which is going to be happening here in a couple months.
Nice.
And yeah, we have some exciting stuff planned for that. It's not a state secret, but we are working on a TypeScript first, ECMAScript module first registry, which we hope will be, you know, a little bit more efficient. We'll automatically generate documentation, kind of like the Rust crates like ecosystem. You know, when you publish your crate, you have very nicely generated API reference actually within the registry website itself. And yeah, it's kind of solving some of the problems that we've had with like HTTP URL imports, which is one of the sort of novel features of Dino, which is like you can include a TypeScript file like just from an arbitrary URL. Yeah. And we kind of started down that path because that is like the webby way to do it. Like Dino is intended to be as browser-like as possible.
Right.
But like that leads to problems like, you know, duplicate dependencies or like your server goes down and like it happens at an inconvenient time during a build. So there are some, you know, advantages of a centralized package manager that we think would benefit. You know, so we're working on that. But yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting. Again, kind of launching towards the, you know, March, April sort of timeframe.
Right.
And yeah, okay. A lot of work to get that done. But
nice.
Yeah.
That sounds like that sounds great. Big thing.
Yeah. I've had a lot of problems with like, you know, nothing. It's the Wild West and no one's like shipping types the right way. Or if they do, it's like, oh, well, you got to put this specific, like, what's your module type and what's your stuff? All these like different, well, okay, this is kind of a separate rant, I guess. But like all the different types of JavaScript modules is a big problem of like the CommonJS and the AMD and the everything. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, just put in what your type is and it'll like figure it out. And then like, we need to not do that and just ship like ECMAScript modules and like have them be TypeScript by default. And then like, you're good.
Yep. Yes. That's what we're building.
Yeah.
You know, TypeScript source code is what you ship to the registry.
Right.
But we've managed to figure out a way to do it such that like you could actually import these modules in Node, like through NPM as well.
Nice.
And yeah, and I like being able to just deal with TypeScript and just publish TypeScript, we think will be a much more ergonomic way if like you're writing your library in TypeScript anyway, to not have to deal with all the shenanigans of of providing your types and sort of manually setting all that stuff up.
Yeah, first class citizen rather than bolt on kind of ideology.
Yep, totally.
Yep.
In terms of like a drop-in replacement for Node, for example, like where are we at in that?
Yeah, so it's kind of it's a little rough because the philosophical stance that sort of Dino has taken is that the web platform is probably the thing that will persist forever. Like it will be here long after all of us are done writing code. And the server-side JavaScript environment should mirror the web platform as much as possible, which is kind of why Dino is part of like Winter CG, which is, you know, a working group trying to like standardize web APIs like outside the browser. Cloudflare is also a member, and you know, folks from Vercel and F5 participate as well. And that sort of stands in opposition to some of the stuff that's happening in Node, where like when Node was initially created, there weren't a lot of web standards that could be applied to the problems that Node was trying to solve. But that's different now. So we want to, again, make Dino the most web-like programming environment possible.
Right.
But that sometimes is at odds with like trying to support like how Tailwind deals with the Node modules folder after installation. Like there's a lot of like very specific things that library authors have done over the years that are very tightly coupled to like Node modules and how NPM clients set up that directory.
Yeah.
So the actual answer is like actually a lot of the NPM ecosystem does just work in Dino. Like if you include it, there's like a NPM specifier is what it's called in Dino. So you can just import Node packages and many of them work.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the friction still exists is with like tool chains that have been built around like NPM and NPM workflows and like the Node modules directory and stuff like that. So like Vite actually works like pretty darn well in Dino these days, but like there's a lot of tooling like in Next.js, which we haven't gotten working yet. So that's like kind of the big focus for the team that's working on Node compatibility is like getting better at handling the tooling that exists in the Node ecosystem.
I mean, but do you think that Triangle company is really going to last? I mean, I don't know if they're good. So
I don't know. Yeah. They're pretty good at good at making it easy to ship websites. So
right,
yeah.
Web
you love to hate them, I think. Yes.
Listen, just because Guillermo screwed us over for free whiskey that he clearly can afford.
I don't know. Guillermo's I think he's hurting for money.
Like every developer tool company that I've ever seen. Like I just expect to see his name now. Like
I know. Yeah, they're involved. They're investing. They're like, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate that. There's a lot of things that I do appreciate that they're working on and folks they work with and everything else. But fuck that guy. No, but I'm just kidding.
No.
Oh gosh. No. But yeah,
we support Vercel. We use it. It's
we
good.
Do. Yeah. I was gonna say we give them money. Yeah, we use it. I've been a Next.js user all the way up till 14. I find 14 slightly challenging, but I think that there's definitely an application for it. I've always appreciated that they gave sane guardrails to React, right? Like, it wasn't choose your own adventure anymore. And I think we'll go down that path a little bit, talking about books and stuff that we're into.
Yeah.
But you know, it's been like a wide path that they have over time narrowed. Mm-hmm. And then they're now kind of putting you in, not you specifically, but folks in their lane to take advantage of the framework is good and it does a lot of things, but the framework is really just do this very easily so that you can have our suite of tools.
Yeah.
We're a web application hosting company.
Yeah. But they're realizing that that's framework agnostic. Like they're very integrated with Astro now.
Yep.
They've got Svelte, obviously, with Rich Harris. Like they're doing stuff with that. Like they're not just Next.js or like
no. The first bit is free, of course. Right, and then like you kind of get introduced and you bring all your friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I always thought that
I'm a fan.
It's very nice DX, especially when you're just kind of getting started. But I feel like every framework that lives long enough, becomes the villain eventually.
That's
like
true.
It finds a point of complexity where, you start to question how much value you're getting.
I'm not a fan. I just start to when you start to infiltrate every part of my life, my professional life at this point, I just start to get a little I'm uncomfortable about it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and they're running a business, so it has nothing to do with my opinion. Yeah.
There are good alternatives, though. Like Spellkit's great, Astro's great.
Absolutely.
Like,
well,
I don't think Next is going to be sort of the only game in town.
Oh no, definitely not. Spellkit is in the mothership. So for now, Astro is not, and love Astro.
No, Astro kind of
they
is.
They get sponsored, but they're not Fred doesn't work.
That's
at
true.
Vercel.
Fred works at Vercel now. No.
This just in. Damn it,
Fred. Can we still be friends if I should talk your friend? Sorry. Anyway, I was going somewhere with that. I think it's to the next cute logo, which is obviously Dino, super cute.
Absolutely.
What about the other super cute runtime, everything, whatever's going on there? Bun.
The little bow bun, he's pretty cute.
He's adorable.
Yeah, not gonna lie.
How do you feel about it?
I think it's good and sort of validates that we're at a moment where Node is no longer just going to be assumed to be the default runtime for everything.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Like we are in a world where WorkerD exists, where Bun exists, where Dino exists. And I think that's a reality that JavaScript developers are going to kind of have to work through and figure out what things actually work, what things are, real and what are not. So I think it's good. The additional competition is good. It's going to certainly make everybody innovate a little bit. Mm-hmm. With a little bit more urgency.
Otherwise. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. I think the choice of Zig is interesting because
interesting is a word for it. Yeah.
obviously there's lots of very cool technical aspects of it as a language. Yeah. But choosing Zig means that it's a giant pain in the ass to get Bun working on Windows, right? Because Dino is written in Rust, that's not a problem.
Right? Yeah.
It's Rust works great on Windows. Yeah. So I think
but it's 1 millisecond slower, maybe.
That's possible. That's possible.
Yeah.
That is actually something that's been nice. Writing Dino in Rust has yes, it is fast, but the fact that Dino is now easily embeddable in any Rust thing actually ends up being a pretty useful trick.
Yeah.
Because it's showing up in Towery, which is a desktop web application or a desktop application framework for Rust. And in a couple unexpected use cases here and there. So, I think what Bun also kind of demonstrated is that there's a lot of hunger to be able to bring a lot of the Node ecosystem to whatever this new or whatever other runtimes are going to exist. Like, I don't know if WorkerD had a Node compatibility layer, before then, or if, I don't know if it was influenced by that at all. But I think that's going to be something that that's why Dino has 3-4 engineers in a given week working on Node compatibility is because that's going to be important in the future. So I do think that's been good and has been a act of service that has been beneficial to everyone that's building this next generation of runtimes is to say the ecosystem is important and we need to support that adequately. Because I think that's a big part of what people are responding to is Bun too.
Yeah, I think that and just that they aren't using anything logical to do all the things. And they're just like, we use this and like, it's faster. And it's like, okay, well now everyone can be like, well, you could technically do it in that speed. So how do we make ours a little faster? And like, it is pushing everyone towards like, how do we be better? Even though like stability is probably way lower on Bun than the other offerings. It's like, that does force people to take a look and be like, we could probably do that a little differently.
So, yeah, I mean, that's part of the, you know, competitive pressure. You know, this benchmark says this thing, like that is sort of a gauntlet thrown down of like, well, maybe we need to relook at how we, you know, how our HTTP server works under the covers, which is certainly something we've done. Also, like benchmarks, you know, people know benchmarks are benchmarks, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's maybe not always like the be all end all of like, you can probably design
benchmarks. You skew them to be what you want.
Definitely, they're important, but like certainly, you know, would take with a grain of salt under those circumstances.
Yeah, that's true.
Certainly not calling Jared out specifically on that because, you know.
Yeah, super smart guy.
It's in a lane. He's done that. Yeah. Other people have done benchmarks. And again, you can
He's not the first to done it. Like,
No. Yeah.
Far from it. Yeah, indeed. And again, like, you know, it's only based on a subset of things that you decide are a benchmark, and you could throw in one different thing and change that and whatever else. There's no doubt that, like, Dano's faster, Bun is faster than Node, right? Like, this is true. Mm-hmm. That is 100% the case. I wonder, like, is it an all or nothing when you kind of choose this path, too? Like, could you Bun as your package manager? Could you Deno as your runtime? Could you start to game that?
You might be able to Deno. I don't know if you can Deno.
Listen, I was validated.
I wasn't going to call you on it.
But what did Ryan call it when he announced it?
Yeah, exactly. When Ryan Dahl introduced Deno to the world, he did call it Deno for like the first however long.
And my brain is old and it got way in there and it just is a hard thing for me to switch. That's not my fault.
Completely understandable. That is a thing that exists in the world. And like with using multiple runtimes, I do think that's entirely possible. Like, I think like the Node runtime itself is very unlikely to ever run on like edge servers, say.
Right, right.
So like there's going to be some use cases for which Node is just not an option. I think there's certainly a world in which maybe you use multiple runtimes for different use cases in different scenarios. So
it's almost like the browser wars to a degree, right? Like, you know, now we're going through runtime options and there's a lot of pluses and minuses for each one. And, you know, sort of how do you play that along for your application for what your needs are? Who knows? Like, it could be this here, this there.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep, it's entirely possible. And I imagine there will be convergence, much like in the browser, you know, market right now.
Yeah,
it's like as like these APIs become more standardized, like maybe we'll converge around like web standards that are pretty universally adopted for server-side JavaScript as well.
Yeah, which would be great. Mm-hmm. I think like that helps everyone.
Yep, agreed.
So I do want to go a little bit to a different topic now. So your talk here was about key value databases.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what those are and what you would use them for?
Yeah, sure. So the talk itself did kind of survey the landscape of key value databases, like different choices and when you might use one. The canonical use cases for key value databases, which are exactly as they sound like. You take a little bucket of data and you stick it in a database associated with like one, with a one-to-one mapping with a key and retrieve it in much the same way, kind of like local storage in the browser. Those types of use cases tend to be good for like data that is usually associated one-to-one with some kind of easily identifiable key. So like user preferences or a shopping cart or like API response caches is another one. Like you don't want to make a super expensive like open API request over and over again. Like caching those results can sometimes be useful depending on how expensive those operations are. So very useful for those types of things. Some key value databases you can use as like your primary application data store too. So like DynamoDB or FoundationDB, which is a database underneath Deno KV, which is kind of baked into Deno runtime. And then Redis being another option that's pretty robust in terms of like the query set. But generally, like when you don't want to use them is when consistency is very important. So like if you have financial transactions, HR records, or data that is just naturally relational. You have users that have many photos, and sometimes relational databases are just the proper way to model
right.
data. But like, you can get by with key value databases in a lot of ways by like using the key space creatively. So like, you can create keys that kind of look like paths in a REST API. So like, can be /blog/2008/whatever. And by cleverly designing your keys, you can actually sort of query your key value database by knowing how your keys are structured and pulling out multiple records that way as well. So
it's an interesting one.
Yeah. So that's kind of the short version. But yeah, they all kind of have different strengths and weaknesses. I think like DynamoDB is really interesting because you can use it kind of like a document database or a key value store.
Yeah. Obviously I've never seen that as a key value store. I've always seen it as a document database. So that use case is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It has, it can very much operate in that mode. And you kind of choose like when you're storing data, which of those two modes you want to use. Like the interface to it itself does feel like you're doing your taxes, but like it is very, it is very powerful as a tool.
How much time you have to like put into, I read the books by, I think it was like Alex Dubois, like is the big DynamoDB guy. Mm-hmm. And he's all about like plan your access patterns and then move forward.
Yeah, that I think when you get really deep is how like you need to approach data modeling. You do have to do a lot of more planning up front because like you don't have ad hoc querying like you do in a SQL database or like a traditional document database. So it does require being a little more clever and intentional about where that data is going, or I'm more migrating in that direction eventually.
Yeah, because otherwise I've always used them for either caching solutions or state, right? Like you want API a state, great. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like if you have relational data or any kind of schemas you want to enforce, I feel like you do that separately with your whatever you want to use. And then if you want to cache the response from that like API request for that data, then you're using like this is like the in between for that is what we're saying, right? Or
yeah, kind of. It's like the one of the benefits of like a key value database is the actual data that you store it like maps very closely to whatever your application's data model is, because you can just throw kind of arbitrary object structures in there. So you do usually have to, in your own software, have a layer that does the schema validation and stuff like that. But luckily, like we have things like Zod and Joy and like other, you know, schema, like JavaScript object schema libraries, which are pretty sweet and have like really good TypeScript support. So it's easy to emit types that you can use to like kind of use like, you know, types as data transfer objects essentially, and then use those as the interface to the functions that actually talk to your database and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, there you go. There are some smart patterns right there. I was like, wait a minute. Yeah. You just solved the problems for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like computer science professors would be proud.
They wouldn't be proud of me, but
are not proud of me.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about how you've created some courses on Pluralsight and like front end masters and things of that nature. And just like, what was that experience like? Do you plan to do any more of that?
Yeah, it's been a hot minute since I've like done any larger scale courses, but Mark Grabansky, who runs front end masters, runs out of Minneapolis, and I'm from Minneapolis as well.
Okay.
So
there you go.
Great guy. It was fun doing the course. Like I did a Node course many years ago now, but like I taught how to use like Elastic Beanstalk and like how to like deploy Node in a production state. I do love teaching. Like I've been in doing DevRel for about 15 years, and a lot of time within that has been spent on like developer training, education. I built like a certification program at one point.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so I love like classroom teaching, especially like I do enjoy content creation, but like I think I like having a class of like 20 people in a room and like being able to equip that set of people even more when that is an option. So,
It is easier to like, if people are having problems, you walk around and actually help them versus like if it's online, maybe they message you or you can't really see what they're doing, but
it's certainly more scalable. But it is fun to like see the light bulb go on and somebody finally gets what you're trying to teach them.
So, yeah.
But yeah, it's certainly fun to do. Like the Pluralsight stuff, I think like we syndicated some content with them. I think I worked on some Twilio stuff with them as well way back in the day. But yeah, content creation. I think, I don't know if Clark talked about it this morning, but content creation is just, everybody does it now, apparently. Like, it's just the way in which communicate with developers.
So. Right.
I'm too old for all that.
Yeah. It feels like everyone, but I think it's just that, like, obviously, web development, software engineering, these things have, like, grown as a need throughout the world for many companies. And sort of, like, there's more of us now. So, yeah, a lot of people are creating content, but what is that? Like, maybe 1%, 2% of, like, the overall industry? Like, it's actually probably lower.
But there's still a lot of competition, even at that percent. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're still kind of fighting over a little bit of space, but I don't know.
Yeah.
What I want to know about is, like, so if you take a heavy object.
All right. Like a Pojo, that kind of object?
Not exactly. No. Like something not with real heavy. Weight. Yeah. Like actually, if I can feel
like
it.
Like something that's maybe.
Put it in my arms, like, made of stone.
I don't know how heavy they are.
Are
like
they
10 pounds?
Are they stone?
20 pounds?
So yeah, we're getting to the point of talking about the curling stick, which I believe is 40 pounds.
40 pounds.
Way heavier than I thought.
Kind of
like
stone or something.
Yeah.
As like a plastic sliding mechanism.
It looks like.
So it is like pure stone. They're extremely expensive too. Like if you like break or wreck one, like it's actually kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But it's a smooth stone that's like concave underneath. Like it kind of looks like a contact lens. So there's only like a
interesting
kind of a ring of the stone that makes contact with the ice when you slide it on.
Interesting. So folks at home, we are talking about the Olympic sport called curling.
The weirdest sport on ice.
And so we're not
it seems
talking
fun,
to,
though.
And,
oh, it's fun.
And just so you know, wait, Kevin is not Canadian, right? Just
no, Minnesota.
Kind
which
of.
Is, I
you
mean,
could
close
be.
Enough.
Close enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So curling.
He probably knows West Boss, so.
Yeah. They're probably neighbors. They're just like, you know, one passport away. Yeah. So let's talk about curling a bit. You see it on TV. You're like, I want to try that. You have curling lanes. What do they call that? What is the field of play?
A curling sheet is what you call it. So like at a curling facility, they'll usually have.
There's a facility.
Like 2 to 6 like sheets or maybe 8 sheets at a very big one.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota, in the bustling metropolis of Chaska, is the Chaska Curling Center, which is where a lot of like U.S. Olympians train. And like other teams, like the Filipino national team trains in Chaska, Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yes, because like on the islands of the Philippines,
not super
they don't have a lot of ice.
Yeah, it's like the Jamaican bobsled team a little bit.
There's like 20 people in the Philippines who are really good at curling, but probably a few more in the U.S. and in Minnesota.
That's true.
But basically, like I did watch curling like on TV and I was like, that like 55-year-old dude with like a dad bod is like out there competing for a gold medal. I'm like, I could do that. Like,
I
was obviously wrong.
In this playing
like,
field?
It's not as easy as it looks.
Of
or,
course,
like,
as these things,
as these things tend to be.
Yeah.
But I just like it. Like, I just think it's fun there. Once you, I'm not good or consistent enough to like participate in the strategic part of the sport yet.
Okay.
But once you do get to the point where you can like drop your stone right where you want it, it is like, it is chess on ice is what they, what the practitioners like to call it.
Right.
Like positioning your stones in such a way where like you're cutting off different shots or like forcing a team to like take a different path towards target. It's really fun. I've really enjoyed learning it. So
is it advantageous to be first or set? Like, do you knock people out of the way? Like, do you want to be first or not? Like, you know,
it is considered advantageous to go second because you have the most information about like how to throw.
Okay.
That's called having the hammer. When you have the hammer, you are going second.
Gotcha. Okay.
So sometimes you will actually intentionally lose an end, which is like an inning in curling, towards the end of a match because you want to have the hammer going into the final round. So that you can play defensively and set up guards in front of the target and stuff like that.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it like, I don't even know. I don't even know. I have like great context here. So you're like, okay, so there's more than one. It's like playing.
It's like shuffleboard.
Yes. Right.
But not really.
If you played bocce before.
Okay. Yes.
Because like, there's 8 stones that each team gets to throw and there's different forms of it, but the most common one, there's 4 players on the team.
Yes.
And each player throws 2 stones.
Okay.
And you take turns each team goes one after the other. And your And then the last person to throw is called the skip. And they're like the, sort of the manager. They're usually the best player on the team. And while the other players are throwing, they're down by the target, like calling out where the stone should go.
Yes, yes, yes.
And like telling the players that are sweeping, because you have the little brooms that you take out as well.
This is what I think of,
and, they will yell sweep, like how hard or like when to start sweeping.
Yeah.
Because sweeping, what it does is it melts the ice in front of the stone.
Yep.
And it makes the stone go like, if you just throw the stone, it curves quite a bit when it goes down the ice.
Okay.
But if you sweep the ice in front of it, it flattens out the curve and makes it go further.
Huh.
See, with the sweeping helps like kind of control the arc of the stone when it's going down the ice.
See? Yeah. There's so much to it that you wouldn't realize.
Yeah. I'm interested in the history of like, did they start just throwing stones and they were like, wait, we could sweep and like make these go better?
I don't know. Like, I'm not exactly sure.
Who invented
throwing? Yeah.
I think it's like a Scandinavian peninsula.
Okay. So they should crush this, but apparently not.
I think like Canada is usually kind of near the top of the heap.
Yeah.
The U.S. does compete pretty frequently.
Yeah.
Right.
The U.S. team's been the same for like the past every Olympics, I feel like.
Yeah. Like, I mean, teams especially, like, they get good at working together. Like, the skip of a team that's been together for a long time knows exactly how hard everybody throws. And, like, kind of, so, like, a unit staying together for a long time is an advantage.
It's pretty advantageous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, so breaking in might be tough. Do they all live in Minnesota?
Many are. Like, we definitely have Olympians that are Minnesotans. They certainly come to train a lot. But, yeah, it's... I think like my Olympic hopes might be a little bit misplaced, but I definitely have like,
you've got,
I don't
time.
Know, I like
don't
learning
up.
About anything, like I'm kind of like going deep enough to understand like, oh, I understand the nuances of like what we are trying to accomplish here. And
I love that it's approachable though, in like, the sense of like, okay, I'm 46, like my soccer dreams are over, but what else?
The long
is?
Jump? Probably not.
Oh, like, no, also none of those things were like. Too much body athleticism.
This is more like dedication and figuring out the like little
just
bit
working
yeah.
on skill. Like
yeah,
this is
skill
more about
game.
Touch. And, you can curl forever. Like there's, you know, folks that are in their 80s out there on the ice sometimes. So like it's definitely
so
a sport
nice.
For life.
Mm. Yeah. There's hope for us.
There is.
I mean, do I have to
every
move
major
to
town has a curling club. Like I bet if wherever
there's a
they want
a
Phoenix
curling club.
They're probably I'm sure there is.
We'll look it up now.
Like, hockey rinks. Like I went to a friend of ours as like a kid in a hockey league, then in this giant complex with rinks.
Oh yeah. I'm surprised how serious the hockey is in Phoenix, to be honest. Like you can go to these stores that are like mini Walmarts of hockey equipment.
Hmm. It's because everyone's so hot. So they're like, give me something cold. To be
maybe.
Well, I think Bobby Hill on King of the Hill once said that Phoenix was a testament to man's hubris, which is just I think like hockey in Phoenix is kind of the emblem of that.
Yeah,
like,
there's no water; it's all hot.
You're in the middle of the desert,
and they're like, "We're
going to
do
like
this
hockey
thing."
Multiplex.
Yeah,
in the middle
I don't remember
desert.
Which hockey team they bought to make the Coyotes, but it was something like Montreal or some like serious.
And brought it to Phoenix.
It was sort of like, I
love
it. It might have been like Winnipeg, because I think Montreal ended up being Canada, Colorado, and then they just brought Montreal back eventually. They were like, we can't not have a team. We're Canada. Like,
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
We
are
getting close to the end, so.
Yeah, so question that we ask everyone most of the time, if you weren't in tech, what career would you choose?
So I actually graduated with a political science degree. Like I was in computer science and I had an internship at kind of an enterprise software company, sat in a cubicle for a summer and was like, no way, I'm never, never coming back. So I studied poli sci and specifically like international relations and diplomacy. So I think there's an alternate universe where, you know, I'm in the State Department Foreign Service somewhere and trying to... you know, cut deals and make bad situations a little less bad.
Yeah.
So I think that could be pretty cool. Yeah. Other than that, though, there's an organization in Minnesota called the International Institute that works with like refugees and like recent immigrants. And working with those communities is always pretty cool because they tend to be fighters. They came for a reason because they bowled.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's something in that space would be really fun to work on full time too.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
that sound both like awesome things. You do a lot more cool
cool shit than I do.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah, so before we end, is there anything you want to plug or anything we missed talking about?
No, I think just like kind of mark your calendars towards the end of March, early April. Have some fun stuff coming out with Dino 2.0 in our TypeScript and ECMAScript registry, which we're collabing up with our friends at Cloudflare on a little bit. So lots of fun stuff to keep your, keep on the radar later on in the query.
Also, next cool.
Dino.
Yes.
We're going to get you there.
Great. You're probably not. It's okay. In Tokyo, I want to go.
Oh yeah.
I saw there was...
Yeah, there was a Dino Fest in Tokyo, which the Tokyo Dino community is incredible. And Yusuke, who's the maintainer of Hono, which is like an Express-like framework for... Okay.
So yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love Hono. Too. I use it all the time. And he was there and gave a talk. It was fantastic. Tokyo is also like my new favorite city in the world.
It's
like,
my number one dream destination.
We need
right
a business expense reason to go to Tokyo. So help us out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we can figure something out.
We can have Ryan on there.
But yeah, the condition is like it has to have the recording has to happen in Tokyo. But Ryan loves Tokyo more than any of us. Like there was like a lunch meeting where we discussed some stuff and he insisted that we go to 7-Eleven to like get like
nice.
Microwave. So we won't have to twist his arm to get it.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Cool. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you liked it, please subscribe. Leave us some ratings and reviews. We appreciate it, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you. Yeah.